Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federalist Society's Telecommunications and Electronic Media Practice Group, was recorded on Friday, March 18, 2016, during a live Courthouse Steps telephone conference call held exclusively for Federalist Society members.
Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group telephone conference call on the Sixth Circuit oral arguments in Tennessee v. FCC, a case dealing with municipal broadband and federalism. My name is Will Courtney, and I'm the Deputy Director of Practice Groups here at the Federalist Society. As always, please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the expert on today's call. Also, this call is being recorded for use as a podcast in the future. Today, we welcome our expert, Ray Gifford. A more complete bio was provided to you in the notice of the call, so I'll stop here and preserve more time for his presentation, followed by your questions. Mr. Gifford, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Will, and thanks for everybody who's dialing in. I'm happy to be here talking today about the Tennessee v. Federal Communications Commission case, which was heard yesterday in the Sixth Circuit in Cincinnati. The genesis of this case is a series or a set of petitions filed by the Electric Power Board of Chattanooga, Tennessee, and the city of Wilson, North Carolina, both of which jurisdictions had engaged or entered into municipal broadband provision. What they filed at the FCC were respectively petitions to have the FCC preempt the state laws of Tennessee and North Carolina, respectively, those state laws with slight differences. Essentially did not allow the municipalities to offer broadband services outside of their own political boundaries. And the city, the Chattanooga EPB and the city of Wilson both said that those limitations were a restraint on their ability to provide broadband and should be preempted under Section 706 of the Telecommunications Act of 1996. There are slight nuances between the Tennessee and the North Carolina law. The North Carolina law requires some cost imputation and some other public utility style regulation of the municipality in Wilson. But for our purposes, the most salient prohibition is on their inability to expand beyond their borders. In response to these petitions, the FCC granted in whole Chattanooga's and granted in large part City of Wilson's and purported to preempt both of these state law prohibitions on municipal broadband expansion under Section 706 of the Telecommunications Act. Not surprisingly, this drew objection from the states of Tennessee and North Carolina. And they sued and ended up in the Sixth Circuit yesterday arguing that the FCC did not have authority to preempt their state laws and particularly their control over their subordinate political subdivisions, and that as part of their prerogatives under the federal order, they had the ability to limit and delimit what a municipality could and could not do, and therefore the FCC had exceeded its authority in preempting these state laws. The panel yesterday in the Sixth Circuit consisted of Judges Rogers, White, and Hood. Judge Hood, during the oral argument, did not say anything. So we're not sure where he will come out. But Judge Rogers and to a slightly lesser extent, Judge White were both active during the oral argument. And my general takeaway after listening to the oral argument was, I think, and maybe this is dangerous, confirmed in my view, and I think the view of most regulatory observers and commentators, that this is, all things being equal, a fairly easy, straightforward case that the FCC loses, and the FCC's action can be, as was widely thought at the time, seen more as an effort at political satisficing rather than legal analysis of what its powers were under the Communications Act and under the federalism concerns expressed here. Essentially, what the state of Tennessee and North Carolina argued is that a couple of cases control this case, that the federal government does not have the power to intrude into traditional areas of state sovereignty, and that the precedents of Gregory v. Ashcroft and Nixon v. Missouri Municipal League control here, where absent a clear, plain statement, a clear statement by Congress that it is intending to preempt a state law, particularly a state law having to do with its self-organization under its own constitution and laws, that Congress cannot do that, nor an agency cannot do that without a clear statement. The argument then continued that there is no clear statement here, and therefore the FCC's action was improper and illegal. The FCC, in response to that argument, and essentially concedes and conceded at oral argument that if the Gregory v. Ashcroft and Nixon v. Missouri Municipal League precedents apply, that they lose, because the plain statement rule creates an insurmountable barrier to them getting what they want to do. Rather, what the FCC argued is that it has traditionally had a broad authority in and broad involvement in broadband policy, and that this constitutes a FCC policy issue where it is acting to remove barriers to entry created by state law and impediments to the under the Section 706 standard to the deployment of advanced communication standard or advanced communications capabilities, rather. Oral argument, well, it's always dangerous to presume too much from it. I think you can safely say did not go well for the FCC. Judge Rogers was fairly aggressive in his questioning of the FCC counsel, Matthew Dunn, describing this as a structure of government issue that the states of Tennessee and North Carolina had the authority to limit what their subdivisions could and could not do, and as a structure of government matter that the Gregory v. Ashcroft and Nixon v. Missouri Municipal League cases controlled, and this is not an FCC policy issue, rather it's a state subdivision issue, and I think he noted significantly we can draw a bright line here that makes this case, as I said at the outset, a rather easy one to decide insofar as that applies. The real challenge that the FCC faced here in its order and faced at oral argument is are the facts of Nixon v. Missouri Municipal League, which involved an effort of Missouri subdivisions to get the FCC under Section 253 of the Communications Act to preempt outright prohibitions on cities and counties or subdivisions entering into municipal telecommunications markets. In the Nixon case, the FCC, and upheld by the Supreme Court, did not find a clear statement of Congress's intent in the Communications Act to preempt it, and therefore did not preempt and found that it could not preempt the the outright prohibition in Missouri. The strange turn of argument here that the FCC therefore had to navigate was they had to acknowledge, in essence, that a state could outright ban a municipality from getting into the broadband business. But once it did, but to the extent a state did allow a municipality to enter the broadband business, it then could not condition it on, for instance, the conditions put here under these laws, which was that you had to stay within your own political boundaries. Judge Rogers essentially, I think, looks at this as a question, as he put it, as to who makes this decision about whether or not states can get into the municipal broadband business, not whether that discretion can be exercised in the first place. Now, again, the FCC valiantly but perhaps futilely remained arguing that Nixon and Gregory do not apply, and that more general preemption analysis apply, that the clear statement rule is not effective here, that in essence it's a how you regulate broadband issue, not a how you regulate political subdivisions issue. That's where the issue was joined, a subordinate issue or a down ticket issue that was raised by Tennessee and North Carolina was that Section 706 of the Telecommunications Act, which is a bit of a strange creature and has, I think, been regarded as such since the advent of its being enacted in 96, one does not constitute a plain statement, which I think the FCC concedes, but two, that it doesn't have any effect whatsoever, in the words of the Tennessee brief, that it's merely hortatory and does not have an affirmative grant of jurisdiction. For those of you who are aficionados of FCC law, that is a live question and one that was raised in the Verizon v. FCC case involving net neutrality as to what exactly the grant of jurisdiction and the contours of that may be under Section 706. It sounded like, at least from the oral argument, that we're going to have to wait to hear probably from the D.C. Circuit what that means, because the Sixth Circuit did not see the need to go there. Let me finally make the Weasley lawyer's qualification that my overconfidence that the court was clearly going in the direction of the petitioners here could always be blown up by a contrary outcome, but you just didn't see, I think, from the questioning, a lot of desire for the court to plow new ground here and make some fine distinctions that are going to that would be required to stay within the bounds of Nixon, but outside the bounds of outside the bounds of Nixon, but inside the bounds of the FCC can come in and tell state subdivisions and override state decisions on how subdivisions can do business. So, Will, that's kind of my at least opening gambit on what happened. As I said kind of at the opening, I think a lot of people thought this was an easy case insofar the FCC was going to lose and the states of Tennessee and North Carolina were going to win. I don't think we heard anything yesterday that would change that opinion unless Judge Hood's silence is a brewing storm that we could not foresee.
Well, thank you for that, Ray. We're going to now open the floor to audience questions here. In a moment, we're all going to hear a prompt that will say, the floor mode is on. After that, to request the floor, enter star, then the pound key. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please hit star and the pound key. We'll take your questions in the order they're received. We have one that's jumped on the line right now. We'll go to that questioner. If at any point you also have a question you'd like to ask, please do queue up by hitting star and then the pound key.
Hi, this is Baron Soka from Tech Freedom. I was actually at the arguments yesterday. Ray and I did a quick recap call for the press yesterday after the arguments, and so I'd like to give you a little bit of a quick sense of my take on things, specifically on preemption, just to echo what Ray has said and explain one detail about it, and then explain a little bit more about Section 706, which is the focus of the amicus brief that my organization, Tech Freedom, filed along with the Competitive Enterprise Institute and the International Center for Law and Economics. So if you'll indulge me with the organizer's permission, I would just say that the key detail that would make Ray's confidence well justified here is that Judge Rogers, from the start of the argument, from his very first question throughout the argument, really told us how he was going to write his opinion. And at the time, it was not immediately obvious this is where he was going, but I understand now in retrospect, what he was really saying is that the FCC's distinction, they were saying, oh, of course we couldn't say whether localities can deploy broadband, but if we, once they do have a law that authorizes localities to deploy broadband, we, the FCC, can determine how they do so. That was the distinction the FCC attempted to draw. Judge Rogers very clearly rejected that and said that that was an unworkable distinction that was inconsistent with Nixon, and suggested that the real distinction was between things that the FCC was requiring, which he would call telecommunications regulation, where the FCC could preempt, versus things that the FCC was merely saying ought to be allowed. And everything that the FCC has been trying to do in preemption really falls into the latter category. And the subtle point that he made, that he drew out very slowly throughout the course of his questioning, was essentially that as long as the FCC was talking about merely saying that localities must be allowed to do X, Y, or Z to expand beyond municipal boundaries, or for that matter, to the terms by which they compete with private companies, so-called level playing field laws like North Carolina's, if that's what the FCC is doing, it really is merely making a decision about who decides. And that, whether it looks like telecommunications regulation or not, that is fundamentally an intrusion on the state's ability to organize itself. And so his reading of that principle from Gregory allows him to avoid the kinds of distinctions the FCC was arguing the court ought to make, to parse some kinds of preemption from other kinds of preemption, and essentially to say, as Josh Turner, the counsel for Tennessee, argued, that any attempt to do so would wind up in the, quote, strange and indeterminate results that the court had, back in Nixon, had cited as being a reason to draw a clear line. So that would be my comment on the preemption issue. And then just briefly on Section 706, this is an argument that we've been uniquely focused on. Tennessee did make this argument both at oral argument and in its brief, but in general, very little attention has been paid to this. And I have to emphasize for anybody who's listening today and who is not necessarily a telecommunications lawyer, just how astonishing the FCC's claim of authority is. You can look at this provision, it's 47 U.S.C. 1302. The FCC, prior to 2010, had always understood that to be a commandment to use other grants of authority for the purpose of promoting broadband deployment. In other words, it was a statement of congressional policy. We would argue that the language in there that says the FCC shall do X, Y, or Z, and that if they make a negative finding about the state of broadband deployment in Section 706B, that they must take immediate action, but that actually may indeed be more than simply a normal hortatory policy statement. It may indeed be a hook for mandamus. But that's the most that we would say the FCC could interpret the statute to mean. The D.C. Circuit in the 2010 Open Internet Order case, which it finally resolved in the Verizon decision last year, accepted the FCC's claim that that is, in fact, an independent grant of regulatory authority, one that would allow the FCC to regulate not just broadband, but any form of communications, in other words, anything under its jurisdiction, in any way that is not specifically prohibited to it, so long as the FCC has some cockamamie theory as to why doing so would promote broadband deployment. And essentially, as we've said, that theory really is not just an elephant in a mouse hole. It's actually, as one clever lawyer put it, it's more like a groundhog hole, because it's outside the house, so to speak. In other words, it actually even lies outside of the Communications Act itself. An important detail here that the D.C. Circuit in its decision really didn't confront, that the FCC, when it first made these arguments, the FCC was willing to argue. They said, hey, look, we should be able to use Section 706 any way we want because Congress didn't put it in the Communications Act, so our use of it isn't even subject to that limit. This just gives you a little bit of a sense of just how much of a Trojan horse that argument could be. It would essentially allow the agency to take any action it wanted to essentially write a new Communications Act inside the old one. So I would point everyone to our brief where we lay these arguments out, but essentially we make a few very quick arguments I'll just briefly mention. One is on the plain text, on the face of the statute. The FCC's arguments are absurd. The 706A gives co-equal authority to the FCC and state commissions. So arguing here that empowers both, especially for purposes of preemption, is crazy. But we go on to cite other arguments about how to read the section in light of the whole act rule, in light of other language very clearly stated in, for example, Section 230, that the Internet is supposed to remain unfettered from federal or state legislation. There are lots of good arguments to be made purely on statutory grounds, but the legislative history, for those of you that are willing to consider that, is even more compelling. I won't belabor it here, but the court didn't address any of the evidence about what Congress was intending, or that Congress had, in fact, considered another provision that would have been Section 707 that would have done something a lot like what the FCC claims, but that was dropped. So I'll just conclude here by saying that this is, if you are looking for an example of Chevron run amok, you could not find a better example than this one. It really should, if you'll pardon the pun here, it should set off alarms for everybody. It is the clearest example I could think of the FCC overreaching, and one that I think if Justice Scalia were still around, I think he would have looked at this case, Section 706, through the lens of the Utility Air Regulatory Group decision, where the FCC, or the EPA in that case, really was trying to rewrite the act, and the grant of authority was so sweeping that it constituted a non-delegation problem. I would hope that the Sixth Circuit would actually take on that issue. The problem from my perspective is that for all the reasons Ray has outlined and for the reasons that I mentioned about Judge Rogers' opinion, the FCC may escape scrutiny yet again on 706 simply because the federalism arguments to be made against the FCC are so clear under the clear statement rule that I don't think the court's actually going to get to a normal preemption analysis where the FCC perhaps might have a chance of winning, which would in turn require the court to analyze Section 706 and ask whether it is really an independent grant of authority. So I suspect we'll have a pretty clean decision here on federalism grounds, that at most it might perhaps snipe at the FCC's interpretation of Section 706, but that fight may have to be fought another day, very sadly. And we may see that decision resolved in the D.C. Circuit case to the extent that the FCC, for example, loses on Title II, but has to justify its net neutrality regulations on the backstop authority that they had cited under 706. The D.C. Circuit, it's true, has already looked at this question. I would argue that is dicta, but the D.C. Circuit will probably not accept that argument, but that question really ought to go up to the Supreme Court. So I'll leave it there except to say that we are continuing to look out for this issue and that the FCC is continuing to use its 706 authority, most notably right now on privacy, and that they show no signs of abating in their effort to continue to push the bounds of their power.
Ray, do you have anything you want to touch on that?
No, I kind of admire Barron and his Confederates' broader urge for more doctrinal clarity and accountability from the FCC on the Section 706 issues. I just don't think we're going to get it here, given, in Judge Rogers' words yesterday, they have a bright line that they can go to under Gregory and Nixon. It's fairly clear. Well, it is very clear. And I think every commentator when the FCC did this thought they had a big problem under those two cases. And there was nothing in yesterday's argument to indicate something to the contrary. So the expectation, I think, should be that the FCC loses on those narrow grounds. The FCC, to some degree, is not chagrined by this. They've, in fact, indicated in press accounts that, notwithstanding, they may or may not lose given the long pass of and legal implausibility of it. They've started a conversation and promoted broadband through the municipal path, and that's good enough. Whether that's the role of a federal agency or not, I'll leave to all the listeners to decide. But I think they knew they were on shaky ground. It looked after yesterday they're on shaky ground, and the broader issues that Barron and the other amici raised, I think we're just going to have to wait for another day to hear what, if anything, Section 706 means.
Well, we'd love to get another audience question here. If you hit star and then the pound key, we can put you on right away. While we wait to see if anyone chimes in, I want to make a quick programming announcement. The Little Sisters of the Poor case is going to be argued Wednesday of next week. We have a preview of that case on Monday at 1 p.m., and then we will do a recap of the oral arguments on Wednesday at 3 p.m. So we hope to hear from a lot of you again for those calls. I don't see any more audience questions here. We'll make a final call. Please hit star and the pound key, and we'll put you on right away to ask your question. But seeing nothing, Ray, do you want to make a closing statement here?
Not a lot to say. Either I was so soporific and boring that no one stayed on long enough to ask a question.
There's people still here. I think we can chalk it up to your amazing clarity.
That was what I was going for, my amazing clarity. I think I'd just reiterate one last time, which it was a clear case. It was an easy case, and it seemed from yesterday's argument that the Sixth Circuit is looking at it in the same way, and that the state of Tennessee and North Carolina are going to win. And hopefully that confident prediction looks better than my NCAA bracket does already.
Well, thank you for joining us today and getting us caught up here. Thanks also to all the shy but well-informed audience members that we have on the line. We hope we'll hear from you again next week. But until then, we are adjourned. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thanks, Will.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at fedsoc.org/multimedia.